Global Connections Television is a privately funded, independently produced program. The opinions expressed on Global Connections are solely those of the moderator and his guests. We invite you to go to the website at www.globalconnectionstelevision.com to view previous shows. If you're involved with a PBS or community access television station or an educational institution that has an intra-campus television hookup, or perhaps a podcast or just a computer and would like to share the programs, please feel free to do so. Global Connections is provided at no cost to help people in the U.S. and worldwide better understand how international issues impact our lives.
Welcome to today's Global Connections program. I'm Bill Miller. Today, we're going to be taking a look at a variety of international issues that affect people all around the world, such as nuclear proliferation, climate change, and many others. My guest today is an expert on these topics. Mr. Jonathan Granoff is the current president of the Global Security Institute. Jonathan, welcome to today's Global Connections program.
Thank you, Bill. There's nothing more important than today connecting the whole globe together to work together.
That's right.
It's an honor to be here with you.
Well, thank you. You've got a very impressive resume. Instead of reading it off, I'm just going to factor it in as we go along. First off, let me just talk a minute or so, and we'll come back to it later. The Global Security Institute, just basically, what is that? What does it do?
At the end of the Cold War, there was meetings called the State of the World Forum that Mikhail Gorbachev and Senator Alan Cranston convened to address how the world changed. And in those discussions, they and myself decided it would be worthwhile to have an organization focused, very professionally focused on the rule of law and the need to abolish the threats posed by nuclear weapons. So the board of it includes people like Oscar Arias, who won the Nobel Prize for bringing endings for civil wars in Central America, Dr. Jane Goodall, the primatologist, a UN messenger of peace, Rigoberto Menchú Tum, won a Nobel Prize from Guatemala, Frank von Hippel, who was the science and security advisor to the President of the United States, Ambassador Thomas Graham, who negotiated almost every arms control treaty of the 20th century. And we're very much focused on utilizing the rule of law rather than the rule of war.
That's a very good approach to take in life. I wish everyone could do that. You mentioned Jane Goodall and Ambassador Graham, both whom have been on my program. And if our viewers would like, they can go to our globalconnectionstelevision.com to see interviews with them. Well, and also, speaking of information, our viewers can go to www.gsinstitute.org. So GSINSTITUTE.org to get information on the Global Security Institute. Well, as I mentioned, Jonathan, you've got so many awards. We spent the whole 25 minutes talking about them, but let's talk about a couple of groups you're involved with and their involvement with the United Nations, and we can ease into some issues that are of importance to people all around the world. One group is the World Summits of Nobel Peace Laureates Winners. What exactly is that group? What is your role? And what is their top issue as far as a major issue to look at as far as a danger to the world or some issue that we have to wrestle with at this point?
Well, again, this organization was really inspired by Mikhail Gorbachev. Mm-hmm. And since, I think, 2001, the people and organizations which have won the Nobel Peace Prize have gathered in a summit. The summits are at least 4 or 5 days long. So you have a process of deliberations on the issues of the day with the people who've won the Nobel Peace Prize, which is probably the most powerful secular moral voice that we have on the planet. Almost all of these people have faced death, threats, and overcome them with courage and qualities for justice, whether it's Rigoberto Menchú Tum standing up to the death squads in Central America and fighting for human rights, or Oscar Arias, who ended 4 civil wars in Central America, or Willem de Klerk and Nelson Mandela, who risked their lives to address getting rid of apartheid, or Lech Walesa, who stood up to communism. And most recently, you have Lema Gbowee in West Africa, or helped end a civil war there. Shirin Ebadi from Iran, who gathered together women lawyers to challenge the human rights violations, or Tava Kulkarmin in Yemen. These are incredibly courageous people. And so we've had summits with them. And at the summits, the issues of the day, the sort of crisis du jour, always is addressed, because the world always has a crisis. That's the nature of the world. But there are certain principles that they have. The abolition of nuclear weapons being one of them. One of the Nobel Prize winners that's so highly respected, of course, is Joseph Rotblat, who walked off the Manhattan Project, unlike Oppenheimer, when it was discovered that the Nazis couldn't build the bomb. International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, the ICANN movement that won it for the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. Others are really, I would say that it all flows from a human security perspective, that we need to put human beings first. We can't have secure states with insecure people. And the human security agenda really focuses on how people are affected by these global issues. The climate panel of the United Nations won the Nobel Prize, highlighting that probably the second greatest threat to human security and is our irresponsible relationship to the climate. So then you have people concerned with refugees. The refugee organization of the UN won a Nobel Prize. 65, 70 million people today are refugees. They don't have a home. It's terrible. The International Red Cross focusing on the laws of war. What are war crimes? Attacking civilian populations, for example. These are things that are daily threats to the whole human community. You see, it's a voice of hope. Cynics would say, well, there are war crimes being committed in Sudan, in the Congo, in Palestine, in Ukraine. What does all this mean? These things go on. Well, I say to them, the cynics, because people still commit murder, nobody suggests throwing out the prohibition against murder. Mm-hmm. We need to have better law enforcement to prohibit murder, better mental health to prevent people from losing their humanity and killing other human beings. But you don't throw out the principle and the rule and the law. And like that, there are international legal standards that are violated. And they usually relate to the fundamental principles we all understand that they're embodied in human rights. And the people who've won the Nobel Prize are people who have stood up to oppression, and for the most part succeeded. I see over my shoulder here is a vase that Kim Dae-jung gave me as a gift. He was the leader in South Korea that stood up to the military junta that crushed the creative and wealth-producing capacities of a free society. And in the 1980s, there was a student uprising. 300 or more students were killed by the military suppression of it. The country went on strike, and democracy took hold. Their sacrifice was their blood watered the flowers of liberty, and the perfume of which we feel today in a robust economy and a robust, wonderful society in South Korea, because a handful of people stood up to the oppression, and he won a Nobel Prize for that. So each year they gather together, and you can go to the website of the World Summit of Nobel Peace Laureates, and I urge you to look at the statements that they collectively do. I'm a senior advisor to the group, and I'm usually part of the small group that collects the points of view and sort of synthesizes it into a collective statement. And they're very wise. And more importantly, they're very practical. Many of the Nobel Peace Laureates were the heads of countries, Lech Walesa, President Arias. There's a great leader today, right? José Ramos Horta of Timor-Leste, as the president of his country. So they merge, Willem de Klerk was the president of South Africa. They merge the practical with the moral, and that's powerful.
It certainly is. Now, what do you do as a senior advisor? Are you a liaison to the United Nations?
Yes, I'm the representative of the group to the United Nations.
Oh, okay. Very good. Yes. Well, and of course, many of them have been involved. In fact, all of them have been involved with the United Nations for decades and decades.
Well, I think there's 10 or 11 organizations in the UN that have won the Nobel Prize.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so, and I'm hoping that we'll hear more from this group in the UN in the months to come. We'll
Very good.
Keep your heads up.
We will do that. Heads up on that one, right?
Because we need to hear the voices of hope. We need to hear the voices of success in these values. And I intend in this dialogue to quote one of the great American leaders who won the Nobel Prize, not to disparage the President Jimmy Carter who won it, but another person well known in Atlanta, Martin Luther King. And I'm going to quote his Nobel acceptance speech before we end today.
Okay. So we'll save
heads
we
up for
save,
that.
We'll save time for that. Well, you're watching Global Connections Television, which is a privately funded, independently produced program. The opinions expressed on Global Connections are solely those of the moderator and his guest. We'd invite our viewers to go to our website at www.globalconnectionstelevision.com to view previous programs. Also, if you're involved with a PBS or community access television station, or perhaps an educational institution that has an intra-campus television hookup, or you have a podcast, or you just have a computer, you like our shows, and you would like to share them, please feel free to do so. Global Connections Television is provided at no cost as a public service to help us better understand international issues and how they impact our lives. Today, we're taking a look at a wide range of international issues that are of importance to everybody on this planet. And my guest today is someone very familiar with them. My guest today is Jonathan Granoff. Jonathan Granoff is the current president of the Global Security Institute. Well, Jonathan, we were talking a minute ago about the groups that you've been involved with. Another one is the Committee on the National Security of International Law of the American Bar Association. In fact, you got, as I recall, a Lifetime Achievement Award from this group for lifetime achievement. But what do you do as a senior advisor to this group? And what is the liaison to the United Nations?
Well, I'm not the American Bar Association's liaison to the UN. That's somebody else. But
oh, okay.
The international law section of the American Bar Association deals with international law. And so there is a group dealing with security issues in that context. And we look at security issues through the lens of law. And so my job is to highlight issues that were the intersection, because most of the other participants, for the most part, are practicing lawyers, doing international trade, international environmental law, within their area of expertise. But I'm spending a lot of time at the UN, so I sort of have a perspective to bring issues before them. So that's basically what I do. And I think it's interesting. You said we're dealing with issues that everybody on the planet is affected by. So is everybody on the planet affected by the immorality of having homeless people in the wealthiest society that humanity has ever had? No. Should we be addressing that problem? Absolutely. Is everybody on the planet affected by the chaos and the border between Mexico and the United States? No. Is it important? Yes. Is everybody affected by the fact that we're melting the polar ice cap and putting the very health of the oceans at risk, the pH of the oceans, by having all of this fresh water come into it? Yes, because 60% of our oxygen comes from the phytoplankton of the oceans. And if we don't know where there's a tipping point in changing the very makeup of the oceans, that could affect every single person very quickly if we impair our third lung. Rainforests, similarly, large part of the rest of the oxygen that we need to live, it comes from rainforests. And rainforests are inadequately being protected. And everyone on the planet is affected by that. Pandemics don't carry passports. Viruses don't care what gender you are, what race you are, what country you're from. And pandemics can affect everybody on the planet, like nuclear weapons. So there's a set of existential threats to our human endeavor that transcend national boundaries, that can't be addressed successfully at a national level. They require global cooperation. As important as it is to end the wars that are going on, our war with nature is a war in which we know who the winner will be if we keep doing it, and it will not be the human community. Mother Nature says to us, you can have plan A, you can have plan B, but you don't have planet B. So the issues that should be bringing us together are still threatening us. And the issues that cause us adversity have to be overcome in order for us to have a sustainable future as a species. Those issues, I think, fall into the rubric of human security. That every human being, what are the issues that every human being is affected by? And they're integrated. I mean, as we impair the climate, we're causing greater disruptions for the poor and the poorest sectors of our global community, which is a significant number of people. It's almost 1 billion people who are living in just insufferably difficult conditions. So climate affects people. And then, of course, when people are desperate, there's no social stability and governance becomes impaired, because to keep stability, the governments will oppress people. And that only exacerbates the problem. So we're sort of at a inflection point, a unique inflection point in human history, in which the admonition of the wise to see the human family as one has now, to some extent, become a practical necessity, because you can't solve these issues at the level of the nation state. They require global cooperation. That's why the United Nations is imperfect, just as all of us are imperfect. We can't, but it's the only place where everybody can get together.
Exactly. You've got it right there. And that's the advantage the UN has. It's the epicenter of the world. Some people call it the parliament of the world, the town hall of the world, whatever. But every issue that you identified today and thousands more are being confronted by the UN and UN agencies every day. And it's in our best interest to learn more about these issues, to support the United Nations, not be just a fawning sycophant for the UN, but to criticize it whenever it needs to be, but also to really get involved in confronting these issues and to do it quickly, because we're losing hope. And that's one of the problems today, as I see it. There are so many issues, and a lot of people have lost hope. And a lot of it has to do with a lot of the misinformation that's put out by various media outlets, just nonsensical stuff that has no scientific bearing on it whatsoever. But the UN is trying to pull the countries of the world together, and there is no other alternative. As you mentioned, where do you go? The United States can't defeat climate change. The UK certainly can't do it. Another group can't deal with all the refugees, the 70, 80 million refugees around the world. But there's no other place to go. But one area that the UN has been involved, I know you've been very involved in it, has been the issue of nuclear proliferation. That is an issue. I think personally, I think climate change is first and nuclear proliferation is second, as I look at it. But how dangerous is that issue, or how prevalent is that issue right now? And has it gotten sort of short shrift with all of the activities going on with the Russians invading Ukraine, the Hamas-Israeli war, that type of thing? But where are we as far as nuclear proliferation?
Well, as far as proliferation is concerned, I would say that the modernization of the arsenals is a kind of proliferation. And all the countries with the nine countries with the weapons are either expanding their arsenals or modernizing them and making them thus more usable. We're hearing threats from one of the two countries that has over 90% of the weapons, which is the United States and Russia. The United States and Russia refused to adopt a no first use policy. So they're threatening them on a daily basis. The weapons are on alert status. There have been many computer errors over the years and been sheer good luck that we haven't blown ourselves up. We're in a more dangerous situation than we've ever been because there's a bankruptcy of trust. And without trust, there's no verification, there's no cooperation. We recently had a president of the United States that just started basically mocking international law, which is the rubric, the structure that's needed to build trust. It's not sufficient, but it's necessary. We need a framework. And the United States pulling out of the INF Treaty, the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, the Open Skies Treaty, and having leadership that even mocks domestic law in the United States. 60 court cases said that the election was legitimate, undermines that fabric. And then, of course, the president of Russia, basically claiming that his neighbor doesn't have sovereignty, is very destructive of the fabric needed to stop the proliferation of the weapons. Remember, Ukraine gave up its nuclear arsenal based on a pledge that the United States and Russia would respect its boundaries and not violate its sovereignty. And we're seeing it being violated. So what's the message that that sends other countries? What's the message that Libya sends? Libya gave up their weapons of mass destruction and they got invaded by NATO and had regime change. Iraq gave up its weapons of mass destruction, not voluntarily, but they got rid of them and they got invaded. So right now we are in a period in which the institutions so necessary for our security need to be supported. And to say, well, they're weak, doesn't mean we walk away from them. It means that we have to heal them.
And there are a lot of people, a lot of foreign policy observers and domestic observers who believe that with all so much of this misinformation, disinformation, lies come out so often that we're really laying the groundwork for World War III. That's exactly what we're talking about, with the same variables to some degree that existed prior to World War I. And so I hope that we continue to have this hope, and we need to look at institutions like the United Nations, which, as you said, is imperfect, no doubt about that. But there is no other game in town. That's it. Well, Jonathan, we are just about out of time, and I promised you 2 minutes for
Alrighty.
Your quote. And well, so first I better thing, do it
I,
now.
I want to put the international financial community and the international business community has flourished, has global governance through arbitration processes, in which, in the midst of all of what we're seeing as some degree of political chaos and inadequacy, business has been thriving. And it's quite extraordinary that people forget that. And we also have the ability to communicate with each other in ways that we never had before. And we also have a cosmopolitan youth all over the world who are looking at the situation with much clearer eyes than our generation. But there are certain truths that remain, and I want to quote Martin Luther King, because I agree with you. There's an issue of trust, and there's an issue of hope, and he said the following when he won the Nobel Prize: "I refuse to accept the idea that man is mere flotsam and jetsam in the river of life, unable to influence the unfolding events which surround him. I refuse to accept the view that mankind is so tragically bound to the starless midnight of racism and war that the bright daybreak of peace and brotherhood can never become a reality. I refuse to accept the cynical notion that nation after nation must spiral down a militaristic stairway into the hell of thermonuclear destruction. I believe that unarmed truth and love, unconditional love, will have the final word in reality. That is why right temporarily defeated is always stronger than evil triumphant. I believe that even amid today's mortar bursts and whining bullets, there's still hope for a brighter tomorrow. I believe that wounded justice lying prostrate on the blood-flowing streets of our nations can be lifted from this dust of shame to reign supreme among the children of men. I have the audacity to believe that peoples everywhere can have three meals a day for their bodies, education and culture for their minds, and dignity and equality and freedom for their spirits. And that one man changed my country because he held to the ought. The ought always exceeds our grasp. We ought to have global cooperation. We ought to have all a system that moves toward the equality of all people. And we can never give up the compass point of virtue and truth. That is what our diplomats, that is what our leaders have to be held to account to do.
Well, that is a perfect way to end it. And that was a message of hope. And Jonathan Granoff, I want to thank you so very much for a very interesting and a very informative program.
Thank you, Bill.
My pleasure. I'm Bill Miller. Thank you for joining us today on Global Connections Television.